What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance. He covers the Canucks for The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in Step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. What's going on, Drance?
Not much, buddy. What a great night of hockey last night.
You know what season we're in?
We're in playoff season.
But more than that, for our purposes.
Former Canucks goal scorers?
No, not even that. It's what lessons can the Canucks learn from whatever's happening in the playoffs?
Okay,
we're
so
in that season.
I want to be so clear. That's my favorite season.
It's a good one.
Of seasons, because I'm just like watching a lot of hockey and thinking about it. The problem is you're watching playoff games and it always feels like the team you've watched not get there all season is like miles beneath.
Yeah, especially because they ended it with, you know, Kirill Kurdziatsev and Ty Mueller in the lineup, right?
Totally.
And it's like they're sleepwalking through these games. The other team doesn't even have stakes in the games, really, for some of them. You know what I mean? So the most recent example you have of the Canucks playing games is like borderline preseason, and then you launch into the first round of the playoffs.
That said, I don't know. I don't know that the Canucks looked like they couldn't hang in a Canadiens Capitals game. I don't think it looked like the Canucks couldn't hang in an Oilers Kings game.
Well,
I'm serious.
I don't know about me.
What the
once
Canucks?
Once McDavid turned it on,
the Canucks. Well, sure.
I know how that would go.
But that's, I mean, we saw that movie, and it's still like, yeah. The thing about the Oilers is they're still going to give you a chance.
That's true.
They're still going to give you a chance, and they're going to let you get just close enough for McDavid to maybe break your heart or for Stuart Skinner to break theirs. That's the rule of Oilers, is it's always way closer than it should be, given that they have an immortal player dominating at a level that I've just never seen anyone dominate the sport at, which is what we saw from McDavid in the last 10 minutes of the third period. Even have stars, man. I didn't think either of those teams played that well last night. So the only series I've been watching and thinking, oh boy, is honestly Blues-Jets.
Well, I'll throw another one out there. Leafs-Senators. I didn't think that was like a shockingly high level in game one at all.
How about the New Jersey Devils?
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing that we have to avoid. That's the one easy bias is like the Canucks don't belong in, you know. There's been a lot of teams that haven't looked great yet. And anyway, it's too early for lessons, except for the lessons that are like,
it's never, never too early for lessons.
They never should have given up on Anthony Beauvillier.
The missing piece.
Kuzmenko can produce in the playoffs. The perfect Kuzmenko game is one in which he gets 3 points as you take a 4-0 lead only to need a last-minute goal to win. It's the perfect Kuzmenko game.
All right. Now, we, as astute listeners might notice, we have not gone to the whiteboard yet. That's because we're switching things up a little bit on a Tuesday here. Drancer has the rest of the week off.
Although,
after today.
Qualified.
There's big Canucks news.
Yeah, I've let our bosses know that I will clock in the event that there's, I don't know, say a head coaching extension.
He's or maybe a head coach departure. We'll see.
That might not get me off the couch.
Okay, fair enough. Really? Come on. That's a big deal.
If we get the decision on Friday that Tockett's not going to be back, then that's something we can react to when I'm back.
Wow.
You don't think so?
I think that's just as big a deal as him resigning, if not bigger. It's a change.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel that urgent.
Oof, all right.
I expect Tockett to remain. Okay, well, whatever. We'll figure it out on the day.
Hey, you do you, man.
No, now that you've shamed me for it. Good God.
Now take your vacation. Anyways, what I was going to say was because Drancer's not here tomorrow, we're doing the crossover today in just a minute here with Donnie and Dolly from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. And then Ian McIntyre is going to join us at 12:30 as well. Are we ready to go to the fellas? Are they waiting patiently? Sure, let's do it.
Let's go.
Let's start the crossover here on Canucks Talk. It is the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. As mentioned, you can catch him on Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. Fellas, how's it going? Thank you for accommodating us and joining us a day early. Lots to get into after some very interesting comments from Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin yesterday.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had Ian McIntyre on the show today from Sportsnet, and he just loved all the information, all the stories that came out of yesterday's media gathering. It was fun for someone like him and us.
I was going to say, if you're in our line of work, it was a great day. It was awesome. It was fantastic. Lots of content. I know some fans had some differing opinions about it, but I was all for it. What was the number one thing for you? What stood out the most, whether it's the tampering that now we find out the league doesn't look at as tampering or the comments about the coach? What was the number one thing for you from what we heard yesterday?
Oh, there's so much there. There was the practice facility. There was the Pedersen situation. For me, we've all got a little bit of gossip in our souls, I think, as people who are in the media business. The incident between Quinn. We've heard whispers and what happened, what may have happened, what might not have happened. But the incident between Miller and Pedersen that they just couldn't get past, that was really interesting. We didn't really get a concrete story about it, but it was really, really intriguing. And then, of course, the thought that acquiring the Hughes brothers even crossed Jim Rutherford's mind. That was very, very interesting. There's so much there, Rick.
For me, it was the public, speaking on JT Miller. And Talk had said Friday, would I want him in my lineup? 100% yes. Jim Rutherford, we were forced to make a trade, didn't want to trade Miller. We didn't want to trade JT. There's maybe five guys in the league to play like him. It's a tough thing to do to let that guy go. The fact this hockey club loved JT Miller the way they did, and they were forced to trade him. Basically, they didn't come out and say it, but it sounds like they think they traded the wrong guy. And I just, the love for JT Miller from management was, I was like, wow. Like, I usually teams make trades and then don't glow about the guy they moved like they glowed about JT Miller. And clearly, guys, JT Miller is a Rick Tocchet type player. He's hard skill in the top six, just like Tocchet played. And guess what, guys? He didn't want him to go. Rutherford didn't. I really liked their honesty on JT Miller yesterday. I thought it was absolutely great. The other thing that stuck out for me is how are they going to get a top six centerman? How are they going to get top six wingers? They basically told you most likely through trades. That tells me that July 1st, maybe they don't like a lot of stuff on July 1st, but I'll tell you guys something else too. I don't know how many guys on July 1st are telling their agents right now, let's get me to Vancouver. I want to go to Vancouver. It's not a destination right now for a lot of free agents. It's not a place where, I think top free agents are saying to their agents, hey, get me to Vancouver. After this season they had and that many tire fires and that much negative publicity, I don't think there's a ton of top guys on July 1st that are clamoring to get to Vancouver anyways.
Yeah, and you know what, guys, let's go back to Friday as well. Mm-hmm. We all knew that conditioning was an issue for Elias Pettersson going into this, and as much was said on Friday by Rick Tocchet. Same thing with Rutherford and Alvin yesterday. So that's, I mean, a guy making that much money, and he must have some pride in that. And then you hear about his practice habits. That's an issue as well. I just shake my head at it. I can't remember seeing this side of Vladimir Krutov. I can't remember seeing anything or hearing anything like that. Well, that's not a fair comparison, because Elias Pettersson had a pretty good resume before this past season versus Krutov, who came in out of shape. So that's not a fair comparison. But I'm just shaking my head, thinking, what? Like, how could you let that happen? I just don't get it.
Yeah. It is pretty striking.
Your feet. I just don't get it.
If you just go back from Tocchet to the other players, and then obviously including Elias Pettersson and then Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin yesterday, the percentage of questions specifically about Elias Pettersson, right? Again, to Tocchet, like Quinn Hughes got asked about Elias Pettersson, and obviously Petey getting a ton of questions when he was up there, and then Rutherford and Alvin yesterday. I don't know, like in Chicago, would there even be that many questions about Connor Bedard? You know what I mean? Like, it's, I feel like he is the most scrutinized player in the league this year. I don't think any other organization is going to have one player under the spotlight like that at their year-end media availabilities. And I'm not saying that to like deflect from him. I think it's justified. What else are you going to ask about? It's a massive deal. You have to ask the questions about him, but it really is stunning just how much his play, his contract, his future, what the organization thinks about him has come to dominate the conversation. And I don't see an end in sight. Like, I guess it could happen if he comes into training camp and is the old Elias Pettersson and puts all of it to bed. But until that happens, it's going to be the number one focal point by a mile on everything this organization does. And it feels like it's taking a toll on everyone, I think is the best way to say it, right? Like, everyone is kind of a little bit exhausted from working through this.
And I think, too, it's just so frustrating because, you know, there's so many people who listen to your show, who watch our show, who love the Vancouver Canucks, who have played sports before. And the basic foundation for any athlete is to keep your body in tip-top shape, especially when somebody is paying you all that money and it doesn't seem like he's doing it. According to them, that's your base. What you have to do is take care of your body. And look, it's not like being a slob reporter or a talk show host like one of us, but you're an athlete. That's the first thing you have to take care of, and it's not being done. And I think a lot of people can relate to that and say that, what? Well, what are you talking about?
Yeah, it's unacceptable. And all he has to do is look in the dressing room and go look at the captain. Go look at the captain who practices the right way, a great pro on and off the ice, and in the summer gets better. In the summer is in tip-top shape. All you got to do is look at the captain and say, hey, even if I'm 80% of the captain, I'm going to be fine. You got a guy in your dressing room that is a model draft pick that is absolutely getting better every year, every practice, every day. That's all they want him. You know, these guys come from Pittsburgh. I've said it a million times. These guys come from Pittsburgh. That where Sidney Crosby, who, by the way, was on the ice yesterday with injured players. He doesn't have to be, but he was. Mm. And so they come from Pittsburgh where a superstar acts like a superstar. I think that's all they're looking for.
All of this said, Rick, to some extent, the fact that they were so vociferous in their criticism, didn't shy away from challenging Pettersson.
Just stop. If you're going to use viscerous or what the ever hell you said, then back it up and tell us what the hell viscerous means.
You've never heard vociferous?
Donnie hasn't. I haven't. Have you guys watched our show?
We talk about harmonicas all day. Yeah. Today.
I love
a good harmonica.
It's like when you forcefully express an opinion, Donnie. Or sorry, Dolly.
Well, they say it like that, Thomas. Well, quit using your Harvard words.
Well, yeah.
It's a normal dictionary word, that's okay.
I just looked it up, and the two words given as a definition, I don't know if they're going to help much either, because it's vehement or clamorous. So does that help you, Rick?
Ooh, yeah.
That's just more confusing.
Clamorous or vehement.
They were very vehement in their defense of Elias Pettersson. In challenging.
That's all you had, that's the word. They were. That's all you had to say.
Vehement? That one you accept.
Yeah, right? I know that word. Yeah. Oh, that's good. I like that.
Okay, look.
Anything with a V.
Oh, my goodness. Are you the NBA? You're like finding me like you, like the NBA filed find Ant the other day. I don't know if you saw that news story. Do you hear this one?
Yeah. Yeah, we can't repeat what he said on the air, though. But yes.
Anyway, look it up. Free speech for everybody. Rick,
get on with your question.
The way that they challenged Pettersson and didn't shy away from doing so, right? To me, anyway, implies like that's not what you do if you're trying to manage the value of an asset and consider an off-season trade. That's something you do if you know you need a guy to be a lot better for you next year. That's one of my big takeaways was if this was a summer in which, hey, we have to consider our options. And I know Patrick Alvin said we'd be stupid not to, but if this was a real right. consider your option summer, don't you defend the guy? Don't you keep at least a little bit of that dirty laundry internally? Mm. Manage his value, manage perception yeah. around the league. The fact that they were willing to air it out to me was like a challenge to a guy you know you need. And I thought that was a fascinating takeaway for me anyway, coming out of yesterday.
And Donnie and I, we talked about this. He's got two powerful agents, Paperson and J.P. Barry. I wonder what they thought of that yesterday. They've been through a lot this year as well, J.P. and Pat. And by the way, J.P.'s on our show tomorrow, so we'll ask him. But he's got two powerful agents. What do they think of, you know, basically the guy got ripped on Friday and then yesterday as well. So that's going to be interesting. Hey, look, what could you realistically get for Patterson right now? If everybody in Vancouver knows he's underachieving, if every single buddy knows, do you not think the rest of the NHL knows he's underachieving? Like, what would you possibly get for him? Seriously.
A fair bit.
I'd like to get a time tunnel.
We do this.
A time
we do
tunnel
this.
So you could hop into it. And make that trade for Natchez from Carolina a year or two ago, whatever it was.
That would have been big. That would have been absolutely phenomenal.
The we're going to do this. We do this every 3 months where you're like, what would Pettersson's value even be? And I'm like, they'd get something for him. Probably higher than you think with the cap going up and how hard it is to find players. I mean, once Sam Bennett, Duchesne, and Tavares all sign, man, you don't think teams are going to be like, let's take a shot.
I always think some team would talk themselves into it.
Hell yeah,
some team would talk themselves into it and say, you know what? Let's take a bet. Let's roll the dice here. It worked for the Golden Knights with Jack Eichel coming off an injury.
It worked for Washington with Pierre-Luc Dubois.
That's true. Yeah.
You know,
that doesn't mean you're going to get a haul.
7 years, guy.
Pierre-Luc Dubois signed forever.
Yeah.
You know, and looked completely disengaged last year.
For Canucks fans, I hope you're right. And Lord knows there's people out there that wish Pettersson would turn into a Dubois or Bennett type of player. Wouldn't that be something special? But I just can't see it. It's just I get upset watching him do interviews.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He looks like he's just completely disinterested.
It was
disinterested.
Tough. That, I know it was a tough watch.
It's second language. It's tough to watch.
No, that part of it needs to change.
He wants a fire.
Needs to change. He needs to at least. Anyway, whatever. We all agree, though. You're right, Donnie, about the way that he's presented himself across the last year on top of the performance. Hey, what did you think of the Hughes commentary?
Yeah. Again, honest. I mean, you got to give Jim. You have to give Rutherford credit.
We were all thinking it.
He absolutely gave you. Yeah, you're right. But for him to say that he's got the brothers there, you know, it's not going to be all about money. Man, he's bang on. Mm-hmm. He's bang on. But next year is crucial, guys. Okay, so you want to keep Quinn Hughes happy? How about signing the guy that he loves, Rick Tocchet? You know, that would be step one. Right? That would be step one to keeping that guy happy. Okay? So how do you keep Quinn Hughes happy? Well, everything you do this summer has got to be with him in mind. You know, to be competitive next year. They got to be competitive next year. Because if they have another year like this year, it's going to be easy for Quinn to walk. But he did tell you the other day, last week, that being named the captain, he holds that high in regard.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? So he did tell you that he loves the coach. They could solve a lot of problems with Quinn Hughes by re-signing Rick Tocchet. And I don't know about you guys, but they're still negotiating with Tocchet. I didn't hear, when I checked in this morning, I didn't hear anything imminent or close. So they continue. Maybe we have an answer, Donnie, by the end of the week or whatever. But, you know, what happens with Tocchet is going to be very interesting as well.
Are they still negotiating, Rick? Because the way I kind of interpreted what Rutherford had to say was almost, we've made our offer and the ball's in Rick Tocchet's court and it's up to him to decide now. But is there still a discussion and a back and forth on what the offer looks like?
I would guess.
Yeah.
I don't. Well, obviously, we're not privy to that. But I they're not there. Did they announce this morning that we have signed Rick Tocchet? And Rick Tocchet, look at Seattle.
Yeah.
So when they got 6-7 openings, Rick Tocchet's got a ton of leverage right now, and Rick Tocchet is going to land a new job if it's not in Vancouver.
Six openings around the NHL, including Seattle. And we talked a lot today about Seattle and Rick Tocchet's connection with Ron Francis. They were teammates. They won a Stanley Cup together in Pittsburgh. By the way, Tocchet, a great flyer. His numbers in Pittsburgh were unbelievable, playing with Ron Francis. And we understand that his son is living in Seattle. Yeah. So you can't help at this point. It was part of being a talk show. You speculate.
Uh-huh.
The guy's contract's up. They say they're not going to exercise their team option, and away you go with the speculation. There's Philadelphia too.
Oh, there's a
Boston.
He's in
New York
spot right now. Talk it.
But yeah,
I mean those yeah. Chicago.
He's in New York with JT Miller.
Yeah. Hey, if he misses JT Miller so much, there's one way to fix it.
And I'm telling you, watching that team defend, there's no team that he'd help more year one than the New York Rangers, right? Because the thing that they didn't do at all was play with any sense of structure, and it's like, we know that Tocchet can help you with that.
The other situation we're all monitoring is Tom Volander, and I mean, this one just keeps kind of getting stranger and stranger, right? With Patrick Alvin saying, oh, we've heard he's going back to school. I know you had a statement from his advisor Tom Diamond as well, or Todd Diamond I should say, Rick Dhaliwal, and then I don't know why. I don't know why I use both your names.
Tom Diamond, Rick Dhaliwal.
I have no idea what's going on. I got completely thrown off. Anyway,
it's Todd.
Todd, I said it. I corrected myself. Todd Diamond, and you're Rick Dhaliwal. I'm all sorted out now. Anyways, you also you factor in how strange this one is, and then you hear them talk about how desperately they need to upgrade at center. We're willing to do what it takes. So, yeah, it's going to be expensive, but it would be really expensive not to do it as well. Should fans maybe start bracing themselves to hear Tom Volander's name out there in trade reports if they're going to have to give up some good assets to go get a center in the offseason?
Great question, Jamie. First of all, let me say this on Volander. They're not in a good spot. He's in Sweden. He should be in Abbotsford. Even if he couldn't play for the Abbotsford Canucks in the playoffs, he should be down there as a black ace, working with Manny Malhotra, finding out the system, and maybe starting Abbotsford. This is over A bonuses. Both sides have dug in their heels. The fact that Todd Diamond, not Tom, the fact that Todd said that returning to BU and other situations is possible over the next few seasons, that's not good. That's not good. Quinn Hughes signed one day after the NCAA season ended for him. Brock Besser signed one day after his NCAA season ended. This guy's 10 days ago, his season ended. Hold on a second.
Demko took a minute.
I see you chomping at the bit.
Demko took a minute.
Okay. Yes, he did. Yes,
he took a beat.
Okay. I can see now, Jamie, I can now see Tom Volander in discussions this offseason. It's not in a good spot. Not in a good spot. They might have to use him to get a top six piece. And, you know, especially if he plays in Europe next year, because teams are calling. Like, there's now the word's out that he's with the national Swedish team. Word's going to be out there that the agent's looking at the possibilities. You're going to see European teams call. It's not in a good spot. I think it's not. And boy, oh boy, I didn't see this, guys.
No, this one's bizarre.
I did not see a standoff.
No,
with the Canucks and Tom Volander.
But it does have precedent, and I bring up the name R.J. Umberger for way back in the early 2000s, and a player that the Canucks drafted. I want to say 16th overall 16th. In 2001. Yep. As I look up a hockey database, but out of Ohio State, and him and Berkey and the agent, they couldn't get along.
And Mike Liut. Mike Liut was his agent.
There you go. Tom Liut, actually. he ended up going to the Rangers for Martin Rutschinski.
Right, was it
Martin
the Rangers? Daniel. Flyers.
Philly. He went to Philly. R.J. Umberger went to Philly.
I think originally it was the Rangers, and they flipped into Philly.
What is the deal?
No, it was Philadelphia. It was Philadelphia. It was his draft rights that went to the Rangers.
Guys.
Luca Spisa.
Not a good way to make a first impression with a first-round pick.
And,
right?
And that's my question.
Not a good way.
Rick, is like it's one thing to have a quick couple days standoff over, hey, we want this, and then you battle it out and you meet in the middle, but like, is, and we don't know the answer to this, but is there permanent damage to the reputation, you know, or to the relationship? Did they offend him or something? You're like, it just seems so bizarre for it to have gotten to this point, and it's hard not to wonder if it's going to have ramifications down the road between the Canucks and this player. Like, it's just, we don't really see this that often with players like this.
Absolutely. I think, like I said, it's not in a good spot right now. I mean, I'm telling you guys, they've dug in their heels, both sides.
Yeah.
But I want to say this, because you know someone's going to say he's going to sign, and someone's going to say, I told you, you were wrong. Well, we're 12 days into this, and you know, one phone call can change everything.
Yes,
but right now, it's not in a good place.
Well, it's such an interesting pivot point, right? It's like, after Rutherford and Alvin came out, and I think really made it apparent to Canucks fans in every respect, on the Pettersson front, on the Tocchet front, on the Volander front, that they're dealing with a fair number of challenges. A team in transition, effectively, as Rutherford sort of put it. You know, they've prepared this market for a challenging offseason, right? For some headlines that come out of left field, right? For some fan favorites maybe being traded. This market is primed for this team to make some difficult choices, but, you know, from I saw your poll question was about management confidence, right? And we are going to be having a very different conversation a week from now if we're still having the same chats about Volander and Rick Tocchet, right? Versus if they're able to lock up both over the course of the next week and sort of begin to check those boxes.
All right, we got to let you guys go on that note. We got Ian McIntyre waiting, so we got to be polite to him. Thank you for doing this. We'll do it again next week.
Adios. Beautiful.
All right, bye.
Cheers, boys.
Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. I have no idea what happened there with me. My brain just completely shut off.
What, when you called?
I was like, Todd Diamond, and then for some reason I said Rick Dhaliwal's full name. I was like, that was weird. Why did I do that?
Noted player agent Neil Diamond.
Anyways, you can check Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal out on Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday, Check TV 10 to noon. Up next, our colleague from Sportsnet, Ian McIntyre, here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, we're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Ian McIntyre is going to join us in just a moment here from Sportsnet. Of course, covering the Canucks, we'll get his thoughts on everything he heard, not just from Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin, but even going back to last Friday when we heard from Rick Tocchet and the Canucks players as well. And then later on in the show, coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll have some time to dig into a very exciting night of hockey in the NHL, first round of the playoffs last night, and look ahead to the games on tap and get more into what we said, our favorite season. What does it all mean for the future of the Vancouver Canucks? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and lots of thoughts coming in there. So send your questions and comments in as well, and we can dive into those a bit later on in the show. Lena and I, Mac, having a lengthy conversation in the control room. I'm Max a charmer. You get him on the line, you don't want to let him go. I get it. I get it from Lena's perspective.
Absolutely.
She's like, this is great. I'm having a pleasant chat with iMac.
Love a pleasant chat with iMac. Usually over good wine.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Man, now I'm jealous. Hanging out and drinking wine with iMac? Are you kidding me? That's perfect.
It is a nice time. I'm not going to lie.
Sounds absolutely awesome. Sean and Campbell River said, and this is regarding Tom Volander, is there a deadline for signing him? I don't see an issue, but perhaps I'm missing something. It's a fair point. there is, like, it's not like we're coming up on the, you know, he becomes a UFA thing or anything like that. But it's just
with who?
With Willander. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like we're there, but it's just it's just strange how it's played out.
Well,
Okay. So we can talk about that later. Anyways, now joining us here on the show, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment from Sportsnet, our colleague Ian McIntyre. Hi, Mac. How's it going?
I'm doing well. I was really enjoying my conversation with Lena.
I know. I can tell.
She's way more fun to talk to than yeah. you guys.
Well, it's been a tough day for you guys, or for you, because you had to go on with Donnie and Dolly and then us. So that's a lot in one day.
I know, but let's be real. Like, in the scheme of things in the world, is that really a tough day?
That's true. That's fair.
It's pretty good.
So let's look at let's dig into yesterday's comments from Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin yesterday. And, you know, I was going to ask, was there one thing that really surprised you from what you heard yesterday? Maybe I should say, like, what surprised you most? Because there might have been more than one thing you heard from Rutherford and Alvin that surprised you.
Oh, my goodness. To dig into that, you're going to need to get some of that earth-moving equipment from
Douglas Lake. Yeah. Yes,
or from Douglas Lake, exactly. Very good. You're such a pro.
That's right.
I've met the guys from Douglas Lake. They're actually very nice guys, and I'm happy that they sponsor my appearances. Yeah, there was a ton to dig into, and, you know, one thing, I guess the most surprising thing was this idea that they might trade for Jack Hughes. but let's assume Jim Rutherford was jesting, because I thought he was. I think he was. I mean, my takeaways, how imminent what the showdown is with Tocchet, and everything else that we're going to talk about, everything comes after Tocchet. It's such a monumental decision that impacts the team this summer. It impacts everything they do. It impacts their outlook for next season. So that's one thing. And personally, I really hope the Tocchet stays. I think, as players have talked about, and Thomas knows this as well, you know, players, especially if they've been around a few years, they're very politic. They understand what they're supposed to say, but you can also tell when guys are being genuine, like, you know, Quinn Hughes's support for Rick Tocchet. And, you know, that goes through the line. I couldn't even find anyone off the record who would tell me that they didn't want Tocchet back. So, I mean, that's a huge decision. But the other things, you know, I guess further validation, if anybody needed it, about the seriousness of the Pettersson situation. The fact that Patrick Alvin is still, quote, keeping his options open, and I agree with him, he'd be stupid not to. But that is still an exit option on Elias Pettersson to try to make a trade. Kind of lost in everything was basically a pledge by management that they're going to trade, not try to acquire. They're going to trade for a top six center this summer, and that it's going to be expensive, but they need to have it. You know, they said towards the end, Rutherford, about they have to do everything they can to keep Quinn here, which I think we knew. But again, that's news to hear the president of hockey operations say that 2 years out from the end of his contract. And then if there was ever a day you were going to announce some disappointing news, like Tom Velander staying in school, yesterday was the day to do it.
It got
very little attention with everything else that was being talked about. I mean, Thatcher Demko's contract and the sharing the risk. You know, there was so much. There were so many things yesterday that had you heard that one thing on a separate day, that would drive the news cycle for a day or until the next thing. And there were like nine of those things in one day. So there was a lot to it. But the biggest things, and the most immediate pressing things, would be, you know, who's going to be the coach and what are they going to do with Elias Pettersson? And that leads into the other big offseason issues. What are they going to do at center?
One of my big reads, Mac, coming out of that was, in some ways, I felt like they challenged Pettersson the way you'd expect a team to if they were pretty much resigned to throwing their lot or keeping their lot thrown in with him. In part because you'd think that if they were seriously considering options to trade him, they might have been more protective of his value, right? As opposed to sort of challenging him to have a better summer and be the difference maker they need. You know, where are you going to find a first line center? I think that was Ben Kuzma asking that, right? Well, we need Pettersson to play like a first line center. I felt like that was a tipping of their hand at least a little bit. Not that they're going to hang up the phone if it's brought up, but that they're at least resigned to the best course of action being, we got to get this guy back on track, and that might partially involve challenging him publicly.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the key point about that is the best solution. Right? Mm-hmm. This is the best thing for, and the easiest thing for everybody involved, if Elias would just, you know, kind of wake up and you know, get to work and make sure that he's ready to play. But we also don't know what the discussions were behind the scenes, and we don't know what the discussions were between management and Rick Tocchet about Elias. And I'm not suggesting for a second that, you know, it's one or the other. I mean, I think, if I'm guessing today, I think we're going to have Rick Tocchet coaching the team. And although I said it was 50-50 on Donnie and Dolly, so maybe I should be consistent.
But what have you learned between hits, Ian? Drop it for us.
Yeah, what's what's the advantage of consistency? No one remembers.
Yeah, I guess. But I think Pettersson, well, you remember about Kuzmenko, I seem to recall, and your take on him. So, but let's not get into Kuzmenko. What a great game he had last night, Kuzmenko. Good player.
Classic Kuzmenko game, Mac. He helps you get a 4-0 lead, and then you cough it up.
Yeah,
that's a classic cool Kuzmenko game.
Listen, I'm kind of on board with you with Kuzmenko.
What about Chatfield?
Yes.
OEL? Was it a big mistake to walk away? How about Anthony Beauvillier?
Yeah.
This is the ex-Canucks playoffs, baby.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad the Canucks have some tie to the Stanley Cup tournament. So, I think that Pettersson probably will be back, because, and I think you and I disagree about this a little bit, Thomas, that, you know, what the trade market would be and how hard it might be to make a trade. But I don't know that they're thinking much about protecting anyone's value. I think they're just honest in what they say. I think Paul Veen was honest at the deadline with what he said about Brock Besser. And yeah, I still think there's a small chance, but only a small one, that still gets resolved and that Besser stays. That one doesn't look very good. But I think Jim Rutherford is honest. And I don't want to say honest to a fault, because as I've said before, we're in the honesty business. I love how forthright he was. I also liked that clearly he was enjoying the platform. Like he, you know, I think was happy to answer our questions, and, you know, was funny at times, but honest throughout. And so we'll see what happens with Pettersson, but I do think that, you know, it's something that they still have to seriously look at. And I think they will seriously look at it. I'm not sure, to your point, Thomas, I'm not sure that he's trying to phone the other 31 GMs, you know, every week between now and July 1st, just to see what the market would be. Although Patrick would probably say that would be stupid of him not to do that as well. So I don't know to what degree they'd be shopping him, but certainly they would find out what that market is like and what that option is like for them. But the best option, you're right, is if Pettersson just wakes up, has a better summer, and comes back and is a hell of a lot. I don't know if he's going to be a 102-point guy again. Maybe he will, but he's got to be a hell of a lot better than he was last season. And the thing about this situation is that I've been critical of Elias, and, you know, he and I have had a couple of discussions this season about things, but I think you have to give him a little latitude, because regardless of what the merits are about this tendonitis injury. Like, regardless of what people perceive about it, regardless of what the Canucks even, as an organization, think about the degree of seriousness of that situation, Elias believes that that is what hindered his preparation for this season. So if he really believes that, and he's now healthy, that's a very, you know, big green light for him going ahead and getting himself back in better condition.
So while I don't want to take the air out of relitigating Kuzmenko's value, Mac, I do want to ask you about Tocchet, because I think I'm closer to your second take after what we heard yesterday. In particular, yeah, the fact that there was very little, in fact, no negotiating bluster. Rutherford gave a full, uncontextualized, unqualified defense of Tocchet's work as the head coach, dropped any pretense. There was no sense that the club would prevent him from being a free agent. They want him back, provided that he's all in. They want him to be all in. I thought that was subtly a pretty significant expression of loyalty and perhaps even progress. I even think you could sort of look at it as a backdoor indication of progress. An executive that seems to be pretty confident about landing his guy here. So I think I'm closer to your second assessment on this than your first one. I would probably put it at closer to 60-40 on Tocchet staying.
Yeah. Well, if we argued about it for the next hour, maybe we'd settle on 55-45. But it's still far from certain in any direction. And let's face it, it's an extraordinary, for this franchise, it's an extraordinarily rare situation. Like, when has the coach decided that he's leaving? I mean, I don't think it's ever happened, other than you could go back to when Pat Quinn coached the team and decided to just focus on being a GM, which ended up being a mistake
because
he was a better coach.
Mac, can I suggest to you, though, like, after they didn't extend Green, right, and he worked out the 2021 season and it was a cataclysm, he had a moment where there was extension talks going on and he ultimately decided to stay. And then also the Boudreau mutual option year, right, where he ultimately decides, not to eschew the balloon payment and remain with the Canucks. I kind of see those two situations as rough analogies, just not perfect, but pretty close. I feel like this club's actually been here a couple times just in the last 5 years. It feels familiar to me anyway, covering it, even if it's not perfect.
I would say the difference is, in those cases, the team was prepared, the management groups were prepared,
right,
quite comfortable if the coach said no.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? And in this case, clearly they want this guy back.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly Tocchet, and I know there's lots of detractors out there, I don't know how anyone can argue about the impact that he's had on the things that he specifically was brought here to do. About establishing culture, about establishing standards, about holding players accountable. I mean, that's why we're having this discussion all season, on Elias Pettersson, because the coach is demanding that what he's doing is not good enough, and it's got to be better. And I think there's, apart from the performance of the team and the fact that this, I was going to say ragtag, that's not the right term, but the Canucks, for all the problems that they had this year, were still there until the second to last week of the season. Had they just, and you've made this point, Thomas, had they just reversed their overtime record, they'd be a playoff team, right? So they were close, but apart from, you know, the performance on the ice, what he has established as far as expectations, the culture, the structure. I mean, how many times have we heard the word structure used since Bruce Boudreau was fired? All of those things are huge checked boxes for the organization. And so no wonder they want to continue that. Like, they've kind of established where they're going now as far as the culture. And you know, if Tocchet leaves, suddenly that's wide open again. And it's not just Tocchet leaving, it's it's Adam Foot leaving and the impact he's had on the defensemen and Sergei Gonchar, and who knows what the Sedins' role would be with another coaching group. You know, should be at least as important as it is now, but you just don't know. You don't know. And I think that uncertainty causes a lot of problems. So I'm glad both sides, and Rick mentioned it himself in his press conference last week. Both sides recognize this is something that they have to decide pretty quickly here.
Yeah.
So, and I hope you're right, Thomas. I hope it is 60-40. I would say, as I said earlier today on another program, I think the sense I got by the end of the season, it was a lot more favorable to him staying than it was like with a month to go, when he had talked about how draining this season has been, how his coaching staff has emptied the tank day after day, dealing with a lot of things they didn't expect to deal with. By the end of the year, I think he was in a more positive space and a frame of mind. And so I hope you're right, because I think this organization still needs Rick Tocchet badly.
Well, and I think the thing that really separates us from past situations with the coaching uncertainty, and as you said, one, the organization so clearly wants him back, but even just more than wanting him back, they have so much invested in Rick Tocchet being the right coach, right? Going back to the manner in which he was hired and Bruce Boudreau was let go and how relentlessly positive they've been about him. And then you also think about one of the big challenges on the horizon, maybe the big challenge on the horizon for this management group, is convincing Quinn Hughes to stay. You need to be able to sell this organization, this culture, to players. You need to be able to sell it to the coach too, right? So like, they have so much invested in him. If he was to leave, to me, that's much more significant and a much bigger blow than past coaches deciding to leave would have been.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And even just the Quinn Hughes factor makes this distinct from other situations, because this is the best player that they've ever had, and he's so openly and directly has stated what Rick Tocchet has done for him and how he wants to play for him, that this is a guy you can play for. So that's that alone, and the ramifications of him leaving and what that might mean for Quinn Hughes's future, that alone to me makes this situation distinct in Canuck history.
IMAC, thank you for doing this. As always, really appreciate the insight. It sounds like you're getting some fresh air, so I hope that it's a lovely day outside.
And I am. I'm walking around my neighborhood because I have found that Thomas is so challenging that I have to be in movement so that my brain can process, because everybody knows like those neurons fire better when you're in motion.
Absolutely.
So rather than walk around my house, it's a beautiful day here in Steveston. So I walked around my neighborhood. I hope you can hear the birds singing. Spring in the air.
The sunshine on your face, Mac.
The sunshine on my face.
The wind at my back.
We can definitely hear the wind at your back.
And by the way, I hope you stumble upon and find some scissors so that you can cut the Andrei Kuzmenko cord here.
I just mentioned it.
I know. It's fun. I love it.
Thank you, IMAC.
All right. Thanks, Thomas.
That is Ian McIntyre from Sportsnet, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas
Lake Equipment.
That is Ian McIntyre
from Sportsnet, barely putting up with trends.
Yes, be a champion on the work site. Find them together online at DLEAMC.
What a gentleman.
.com. Now, we will dive into the playoffs a little bit in more detail on the other side. But just before we go to break here, it's time for a one to watch brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. And I don't want to speak for you here necessarily, but I mean, to me, it's got to be the series that's getting going that has not started yet, which starts tonight, which is the Battle of Florida. Matthew Tkachuk, game time decision, was on the ice at morning skate for Florida. I know I've been high on the Lightning. A lot of other people have, and this should just be a fantastic series.
So last night was so sick that I feel like it's obscured the truth about the first 3 days of the playoffs, which is that so far there's been one really exceptional series, the Blues and the Winnipeg Jets. And otherwise, some of these games have felt pretty mid-January.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have felt pretty lopsided, where the other side kind of has to get lucky to sort of keep the game going. I feel like Panthers-Lightning is like an old school,
yes,
two well-matched teams, playoff history, geographical, yeah, rivalry, like
veteran
is,
playoff successful winning teams going at each other.
We need this series to be a standout, I think, based on what we're seeing in some of the other ones, because, and this makes sense, right? I talk a lot about variance being a smaller impact on outcomes in this new contemporary NHL where the shooters rule. And one byproduct that I worry about, if that's in fact true, if that theory holds and shapes outcomes here, one thing I worry about is, do we start to see a watered down first round?
Does it come closer to the NBA first round, which usually sucks?
Does it shift closer to that?
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, like, doesn't it feel like the Devils are going to need to get lucky to beat the Hurricanes?
Yes.
I hope that that's not going to be the case in Ottawa, Toronto, but that first game was certainly concerning from Ottawa's point of view. Minnesota looked like they were going to get blown out of the water whenever Vegas cranked it up. The Stars already look like they need bounces just to keep up with the Avalanche. The Canadiens and the Capitals, despite the Capitals not exactly beating the PDO frauds criticism in game one, I mean, that series looks like it could be lopsided in Washington's favor. And then you get to, can the Kings do enough damage against Skinner to offset what McDavid's going to do to them? A classic rivalry. Maybe that's like the Habs-Leafs of our generation, is Connor McDavid versus own team.
The rest of his team.
Yeah, versus, and that's a little mean to Leon Draisaitl.
Yeah, I was going to say the rest of the Connor team Brown, other than Leon Draisaitl.
Anyway, so that's what I'm watching. Florida, we need you.
Yeah. We need the state of Florida to come through for us. When has that ever worked out poorly for anyone? Anyways, it's time.
You can always count on Florida.
It's time to put on your Toyo tires. Whether you drive a car, light truck, or van, Toyo tires are designed to perform in all kinds of conditions. Visit Delaney's OK Tire in Langley and Aldergrove. More on the Stanley Cup playoffs and the Canucks next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now, we were getting into it a little bit in jest with Ian McIntyre, but I have noticed people in the city, Canucks fans, here in the Dunbar Lumber text line on social media, have noticed the volume of former Canucks playing a role early in these Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, one of our texters, Chris and Duncan, was sending in a long list, and he was going way back, right? So he's like, hey, Jonah Gadjevich, Matthew Highmore, Adam Gaudette. But I think the ones that people have been more focused on are the relatively recent. And, you know, we're still talking a couple years in some cases that they exited the organization, but the relatively recent departures playing in some cases significant roles. And we think about Andre Kuzmenko, as we talked about, with Ian McIntyre, who had 3 points last night for LA. Anthony Beauvillier scored a big goal for the Washington Capitals. Oliver Ekman-Larsson playing a big role on the Toronto Maple Leafs blue line. And I understand, I actually think it's a very similar impulse to the one we were talking about off the top of the show, right? Which is the, oh my goodness, the Canucks are miles away from hanging with any of these teams impulse when you sit down to watch the playoffs. It's natural. They're like, hey, I recognize that guy. We drove him out of town. What? Now he's succeeding in these big games? Like, I get where the impulse comes from. I think the key here is, and why I don't find it especially compelling as like a blunder on management's part, or at least not entirely, we'll get to that in a second, or this massive missed opportunity, is as much as we talk about the cap going up and how that's going to change how we think about players and contracts and all of those things, it's still a hard cap league. So it's not just about, do you have, like, what is player X doing? It's also about, How much are you paying them to do it? How much are they costing you against the salary cap? And one of the unifying features about those three players, OEL, Anthony Beauvillier, and Andre Kuzmenko, they're all making at most 50% of what they were when they were in Vancouver, right? They're counting against the cap for only 50% of their current team, or less, in Beauvillier's case, significantly less than what they were in Vancouver. So you look at Andre Kuzmenko, and he's making, I think, 2.75 now for the LA Kings. Well, that's a very different proposition to have that guy in your lineup as like, hey, power play spark plug. You know, we can move him up the lineup if we're chasing a game. We can bury him in the bottom six if we're trying to hold the lead. That's a very different proposition than paying 5.5 for a guy like Andre Kuzmenko. Oliver Ekman-Larsson was making over $7 million here.
Yeah, don't like that. But you like him at three.
You like him at three. 3.5. Oh, yeah. So, okay, hey, you can work with that.
Heck yeah.
You can work with that. You know, kind of 4-5 guy. Maybe he plays on your third pair. Maybe you own 4th minutes or whatever. But you're telling me they would have been better off to keep Oliver Ekman? Like, you think the Canucks would be better with OEL at 7+ for however many more years now? And Anthony Beauvillier is like a hair over $1 million. And he was making over $4 million against the cap here, right? So that's like a 25% rate. So I get it. I get the frustration. But I just don't think you can properly evaluate it without factoring just how much cheaper these players are. Now, that leads me to the point where I do think it's fair to criticize different regimes, which is, well, why did you have those players on those cap hits in the first place? Like, sure. That to me is the real point of criticism, not how did you let these guys slip away. You let them get away because they were inefficient contracts and you were able to move off of them. That's why you got rid of them. Why did you have them on inefficient contracts in the first place, I think, is the more fair line of criticism.
Yeah, I mean, Kuzmenko. So, look, there's a lot to unpack here, just in terms of each player's individual path through. I mean, the fairest guy, I think, to spotlight of the ex-Canucks, there's two guys who I think are in this playoffs, ex-Canucks. Well, maybe you can include Vasily Podkolzin, but, I mean, Vasily Podkolzin also is, like, kind of a dime-a-dozen, big-bodied middle-six guy who doesn't really score. So, even when he's with Dreisaitl, it's not like he's putting up top six rate scoring stats.
If Vasily Podkolzin was still on the Canucks, we'd be having the same conversation we're having about like guys like Drew O'Connor or whatever. It's like, sure. Maybe he finds some chemistry, but is he going to score enough? Like, that's it. That's the player.
And I like Drew O'Connor more.
Sure.
Because of the speed.
Yeah.
You know, like he's a faster skater. And that matters because he uses his speed size combo really well defensively. Even though, man, he was snake bitten as a finisher down the stretch and feels like he's absolutely 100% faded. Drew O'Connor is to have the like Yannick Hansen, like looks like he's working hard and not accomplishing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's 100% guaranteed to have that line be tarred with that line over the course of next season, but also probably be like impactful and be one of the guys that I defend, and then he'll have some shooting percentage bender and I'll be like, oh, I was right, but really he's just getting lucky over a small stretch of games. Anyway, that's a preview of Canucks talk for next season in terms of what we'll be chatting about with DOC. Anyway, Chatfield I think is the real like tough one, right? There were people in the organization that absolutely loved him, right? Like really loved the development, the way that he'd worked his defensive details, especially in the American League, and believed strongly that it would translate. Ryan Johnson, for example, like Chatfield had huge fans internally. Club didn't prioritize him, and he's become like a legit top four guy for an elite defensive team. I mean, given what the Canucks have had to spend, the 11th overall pick in a loaded draft class, the first round pick they traded for Philip Hronek, extending Tyler Myers, right? Like they've had to, Victor Mancini coming back as part of the JT Miller trade. I mean, that's a lot of treasure sunk into bolstering the right side when you had a guy and you weren't willing to sign him for like basically a league min contract. Tanev, right? One of the, one of the big departures in,
but see, now we're into like a different category of guys,
but
I don't think anyone's going to argue that like they should have kept Kurstanov. It's like, yeah, of course
and
they should have.
And Chatfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that to me is a different process than, well, this guy doesn't make sense on our roster, so we're going to move him.
Amount.
And then it's like, oh my gosh, they're contributing. It's like, totally. Yeah, it's not like they were going to leave the NHL. Well, just they didn't make sense on that number.
The way that the organization sort of ran things in terms of the cap space that they committed with the Hronek trade, with like the Miller extension, with like some of the stuff, the decisions that it previously take getting Beauvillier's contract back in the Horvat trade, they had to buy out OEL. It was a unique window to do so, right? Mm-hmm. Where you created effectively a 2-year window, although the only one of those years turned out to be profitable for the franchise, where you could get out of it and then actually have a normal offseason and give your club a chance. And by the way, club had 109 points, won the division. So that sort of justifies at least the short-term side of it, even though they couldn't sustain that success this year.
Mm-hmm.
The short-term logic of that deal or that of that buyout hit, even if it's going to be tough for them to navigate, inefficient for them to navigate over the next two seasons. Beauvillier, the problem with the Beauvillier trade, honestly, or getting Beauvillier back in the Bo Horvat deal, was the opportunity cost of him soaking up 4.15 over the course of that summer, right? Because you could have done interesting stuff with it. Now, the club ended up finding a way to do interesting stuff
yes.
with it because they turned it into Zadorov. Zadorov was a perfect fit and had a cult hero run in the Stanley Cup playoffs when the team hosted, six games and got to within a game of the Western Conference Final. You do that every time. It worked out, even if the execution, you could quibble with it. Kuzmenko should have been dealt before he was extended. He should have been dealt off that first season, but club decided to extend him. He wasn't a fit with how Rick Tocchet wanted to play. And I think this is like, there's two sort of relevant lessons that I think we can draw from this as they pertain to the Canucks. Now, here's the first. Over the course of that dream 2023-2024 season, the Canucks got better as the year went on, even though their results in the first half of the season, inflated by an incredible run of shooting success, but also power play success, and Thatcher Demko absolutely killing it. Like, mm-hmm. the results were ungodly for the first 3 months of the year, but their process, their actual quality of play got better later in the year, down the stretch, and it got better because they became a truly elite defensive team. How did they become a truly elite defensive team? Carson Soucy got healthy. They added Zadorov to the roster, and
Lindholm
added Elias Lindholm to the roster, and to the penalty kill. And in order to accomplish that, they did the Beauvillier trade and they did the Kuzmenko for Lindholm trade. And what that did was it reallocated money that the Canucks had sort of inefficiently contained in non-premium spots on the roster, specifically with middle six wingers, into the center ice position and the defense position, which is what this team needed to do. That was actually, and we were talking about it during the season, that was actually an incredibly deft sleight of hand to reallocate as they contended over the course of the season.
Well, and
it worked out.
And the Kuzmenko part of it in particular, I remember having this conversation a lot on air at the time, which was like, if you're going to do something at the deadline, you're going to have to trade Kuzmenko because you got this guy who's playing 10 minutes a night. And okay, if you want to pick a fight with Rick talking about that and say, well, could you have gotten more out of him? That's fine. But in the moment, it was, you've got this guy making over $5 million. You're trying to desperately improve your team. Like, he, and it's dollar in, dollar out. He has to be the piece to go.
Well, him or Mikheyev, but you would have had to pay more to Calgary if it was Mikheyev.
Right.
Right. And anyway, Mikheyev had a better season than Kuzmenko this year, to be totally honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know that we'd say they chose wrong necessarily. At the end of the day, three LA Kings forwards played less than Kuzmenko at 5-on-5 yesterday. So he was playing third line minutes, okay? He is always on the ice with Adrian Kempe and Anze Kopitar, which helps, I think, a fair bit in terms of disguising some of his limitations as a result of him not being a fast skater and not being an attentive defensive piece. He played five shifts in the third period, only one of which was at 5-on-5. 1 minute and 28 seconds entirely in that third period. Everything else was on the power play. 4 minutes and 24 seconds on the power play in the third period. So there are, like, Kuzmenko's a specialist. He's sick at the net front. The goal that he scored to open the scoring is like Kuzmenko from his office.
How many times do we see that?
He's honestly so sick.
How many times do we see it? It was like, I was watching, I was like, whoa, there he is.
He is awesome down low. He's awesome at feathering passes as a playmaker through defensive zone coverage and finding quiet ice. Like 5-on-4 at the net front and down low, Kuzmenko, you want him on your side.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, okay, this guy's making just over $2 million. and we can use him as a power play ace, and we can hide him in the third period.
And
because we're not paying him that much.
And we have a team that controls play anyway.
Right.
We have a team filled with drivers. Like, all we have is drivers. What we don't have is a guy who can eat off of the perfect, intricate table setting that all of our defenders and forwards are capable of setting up. In that situation, as a finishing offensive depth piece, Kuzmenko is perfect. He's perfectly slotted. He's perfectly compensated. The idea that the Canucks like squandered him as a perfect running mate for Elias Pettersson, to me, does not pass muster. Like, that wasn't going to work long term. They had a great season with an incredible amount of wind at their back from a shooting percentage luck perspective. There was obvious chemistry, especially on the power play. But the Canucks weren't, I don't think, positioned to get the most out of him, frankly. And more than that, I think gave themselves the best shot they could in that 2023-2024, the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs in particular, by taking Beauvillier and Kuzmenko's salaries and turning it into Zadorov and Elias Lindholm. Like, I think you do that again every time, and I think to suggest you wouldn't is kind of backseat driving. Now, to bring this to a sort of wider conversation of where we sit today, that process of taking a position of depth on the wings in that case and converting it, you know, with a third round pick and a first round pick and Hunter Brustevich to sort of juice the return or juice the deal. That process is something that I think the Canucks are going to have to consider. And the two obvious areas of surplus that stand out to me are in goal, where you've got Lankinen, Shelovs, who wouldn't, I don't think, have much value, and Demko, who I think would, although the clubs and the player both made very positive noises about an extension yesterday. You know, that's still one that I'm going to be watching this offseason. And the other is on defense. Now, the Volander stalemate changes that equation slightly in that it makes one of the most valuable right-handed defenders that the team has in the system potentially more likely to get dealt, right? I suppose that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Or a more realistic possibility today than I would have imagined 2 weeks ago. But whether it's Volander or Mancini, or less likely Filip Hronek, although that would be a huge return potentially, the Canucks do have some flexibility to take this hard-won accumulation of talent and depth on the back end and use that to help them address us what I would describe as an emergency shortfall up front. You know, you can say they probably have some two in the middle six, winger wise too. Between O'Connor, Joshua, Hoglander, Garland,
yeah, Sherwood,
right. So you have basically five guys you absolutely love in the middle six. So maybe there's another body there. You know, but that's what we're talking about. That now the team's going to probably need to look long and hard at these areas of surpluses: middle six wing, defense, and goal, and be like, how can we assemble a package, painful as it might be, to try and add center depth and ideally top line forward skill into our line?
And the problem with the middle having one of your positions of strength being middle six wingers is, you know, we had the discussion about like the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday building on premium positions. Well, it's like being loaded at middle linebacker in the NFL, right? You're like, it's nice to have good middle linebackers, but that's not who's getting drafted high. That's not who's getting money in free agency at this point, right? So
not the guys who aren't making it to free agency.
Yeah. So they don't have a ton of value necessarily. And somebody texted in what inefficient money do they have on the books going forward? Like in this summer. And he doesn't mean, you know, retention and buyout hits. He means like
money in, money out.
Yeah. Like money guys that you would look at and say, let's try to reallocate his cap hit.
No, there's none.
They don't really have it. Elias Pettersson could be the answer.
Sure. Elias Pettersson or Demko.
Would you call that inefficient?
I would not.
Yeah.
I would not, but I'm just saying from a dollar in, dollar out perspective, those would be the ones that stand out to me only because of the logic of having already done Lankinen. Now, you're not like hard done by. It's not inefficient to spend $9.5 million on two guys that I think we look at as pretty good bets to be average or better goaltenders, save percentage-wise, provided that they're healthy. But on an expiring contract, given the injuries that he contended with over the course of the season, you know, I think Demko and Pettersson would be the closest to the right answer to that question. And yet I think you can make very compelling arguments against them being included too.
Yeah.
In fact, more compelling. I'd side against them being described as inefficient.
Because if you're just looking at the wing and you're like, okay, we need to move someone from the wing in order to get assets and cap space to help us at the center position, Connor Garland makes the most there of the players we're talking about. That's not inefficient.
No, 4.9. Awesome value, yeah.
Now, he probably might get you the best return as well because he's a good player. You know what I mean? Yep. But there's no one you look at in a similar position to Beauvillier or Kuzmenko in the past, where you're like, ooh, I really don't like paying them that.
But they have 14 plus million in space, right? Like, they also don't have to go dollar in, dollar out necessarily.
Not, it depends how much they're trying to do, right? Jim Rutherford threw three out there. That's probably going to take more.
Yeah.
Probably have to subtract if you're doing that.
You're also going to have to subtract good players anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like a Hoglander, a Garland, a Demko, a Pettersson. Like, I think you have to, and I honestly still think that that's partly why that availability took on the tone that it did. If you're going to spend, if it's more expensive to, it's expensive to add a top six center, top two line center iceman, but it's more expensive not to, he's priming the market for this club to make some really difficult decisions and potentially, I think, consider trading fan favorites, star level guys, guys who this city has invested a lot of emotional attachment to, but also hope into. I mean, that's the stuff that's got to be on the table if you're going to address what I consider to be an emergency shortfall up front, and what I think the club does too.
Okay, we'll take a break here. Send your texts in. Lots more to get into from the NHL playoffs and also some very interesting commentary from Ron Francis in Seattle that we can talk about a little bit here on the other side on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here as well. We are live from the Kintech Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Before we start talking about some of the games last night, looking ahead to tonight's games as well, some front office news around the NHL. Now, we had an inkling this was coming yesterday, but has since been made official. Ron Francis promoted to president of hockey operations for the Seattle Kraken. Jason Botterill takes over as GM. And, of course, that follows Dan Bylsma being let go as head coach yesterday. And Botterill and Francis addressing the media down there as we're doing our show. And during the last segment, perusing my social feed, friend of the show, Allison Lucan, has this one. Francis, on the not easy decision to part ways with Dan Bylsma, said that he thought the Seattle Kraken needed more structure, more details. And at the end of the day, we didn't get the results. More structure. Could there be any coaches on the market who specialize in bringing structure to an organization?
Greg Cronin. Is that who you meant?
No.
Anaheim Ducks, ex-Anaheim Ducks
coach.
That's
not who I meant.
Greg Cronin?
Not who I meant. Oh. That would be a wild hire. Can you imagine? We just loved what he did in Anaheim. Had to get him here. I'm just throwing it out there. It's impossible to hear about a coaching vacancy and see the decision maker say the word structure and not immediately think of Rick Tocchet.
Yeah. Someone's got to give Todd Nelson another shot, by the way.
Sure.
Todd Nelson, for me, is the guy.
I'm always saying that.
Yeah, he deserves another shot. It's been a long time. He coached for the Oilers, right, for a little bit. He was the Oilers head coach for like a minute after a really strong run with them. So he only got 51 games.
Yeah.
For the Oilers. They missed the playoffs. He replaced Dallas Eakins in midseason. Guys won three of the last four Calder Cups in the American League. and he had a really successful stint. Sorry, so that's not true. He's won the Calder Cup in three of his last four American League seasons.
Yes.
And then he had like an interim sort of stint in between that where he was running the power play for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Like, what are we talking about here? Someone's got to give this guy a shot.
I don't know what to tell you.
I'm just saying it. Someone's got to give this guy a shot. I really do think the best candidates are the American League. The top American League coaches are the best candidates. Like, if Tocchet moves on, right, and you don't know that Manny Malhotra is ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, by the way, if Manny Malhotra was the guy, if they were like, your American League season was so impressive, we're going to promote you, we believe in you, I wouldn't be that mad about it, I don't think.
It would be aggressive, but they obviously are very, very happy with the work he's done.
They have to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done an incredible job.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some, like, shades of John, you know, the 13-game win streak, the long win streak mm-hmm. early on in your American League. Like, there's some shades of John Cooper in there. Cooper had a little more American League experience as a head coach and more overall experience as a head coach and a law degree. But, like, whatever. We're not judging anyone off that. Promoting a top AHL head coach, I love that move generally. Like, I think Jeremy Colleton, who ran an mm-hmm. incredible Devils power play this year, has been a top American League coach, an excellent Canucks Talk guest over the years, too. I think that would be, like, a smart move for one of these teams. But I know you're getting at Tocchet and Seattle. I'm not buying that at all.
I don't know. I'm
out on that.
I'm the only reason I'm bringing it up is because of the word structure.
Like,
that's the only reason I'm bringing it up.
Maybe. I could see Philadelphia being interesting if Tocchet moves on. But mm-hmm. I think if you're looking anywhere but the big original six teams, I think you're barking up the wrong tree in terms of where Tocchet's going to go. Like, Dolan and the Bruins, like, they're going to be super aggressive mm-hmm. in making sure they get the top candidate. Tocchet, if he does shake loose, is going to be the top candidate. No one's outspending those teams. Like, I'm sorry.
It's also, you got to, the sticking point for me with Seattle is, what's the draw to the Seattle situation specifically? Like, I've made the point during the season, they're kind of feel like they're the Canucks minus Quinn Hughes. You know what I mean? And it's like, does that sound?
I don't think that's
does
right.
Does that sound desirable?
No. They
have more young pieces.
They have way more young pieces. And I mean, the appeal of the Kraken is, we've got a lot of center depth and speed down center, and we don't have a Quinn Hughes level player, but we have Montour, Dunn, Larson, Oleksiak. Like, we have a pretty robust and depth defensive group. You know, that's it. Like, we have to graft a lot onto this, but, you know, we get a couple wingers and we improve the way we play. And I mean, here's the truth about the Seattle Kraken. They got 17 of an possible 52 points in games Philip Grubauer started.
Oof.
That's the season.
That's tough.
There is literally no reason.
Why did Dan Bylsma do that?
Right. There is no reason when you look at their underlying profile, how they play, that they should have been as far behind the likes of Utah, Calgary, and Vancouver as they were, except for they couldn't lean on their backup goalie at all. Now, Vancouver, Utah have also had those issues, but not as pronounced, like to some extent, not as pronounced as Seattle did.
Yeah.
I mean, their strategy in net. And this is actually, like, I'm just going to come out and say it. I think that Seattle's done some pretty interesting things in Francis's tenure. I think their player development's been pretty interesting and really solid. The success that they've had at the American League level, of which Bylsma is a key mm-hmm. part, I think is admirable and will matter for them down the line. I think they've drafted well. So, and I think they've hired smart people. So, you know, it's not all bad for Francis. That said, Grubauer is a perfect encapsulation of what they got massively, unforgivably wrong in assembling this team in the first place, which is, in a flat cap environment that was already locked in, they approached the expansion draft and decided that they'd largely use it to keep their powder dry, in part because other NHL general managers weren't willing to make, you know, protective trades the way that the way they did with the Vegas Golden Knights. And their reaction to that was, okay, let's keep our powder dry and build our team through unrestricted free agency. In the scarcest cap environment that we've seen in the NHL in 25 years, they basically threw any valuation of cap space out the window as a consideration. If NHL general managers weren't willing to do deals with you, and by the way, you can go back, you can go view the receipts after the expansion draft, and I was criticizing this at the time. So this is not backseat drive. This is not with the benefit of hindsight. This is what I was saying at the time, and it's played out as, you know, somewhat closely to what I expected, which is that if NHL general managers won't do those deals with you, wait them out.
Right.
Wait them out. Draft a team that's, you know, as young as possible. You're going to be somewhat limited in terms of what you can draw anyway in the first 2 years. And, like, let them make those trades with you later because you have the wall of cap space that no one else does. Like, they completely sacrificed that advantage. And in so doing, built a team that was short of elite players. Like, they're short on elite players, aren't picking high enough to draft them again, right? And so even though they've done pretty well, like, Barkley Catton was a great pick. He's progressing really well. Shane Wright, man, he had an awesome season. I'm really excited about what the future looks like for Shane Wright. Matty Beniers has sort of plateaued.
Yeah,
that's really the first task for any
new coach,
incoming head coach, is like, how do we get Beniers back to where he was in his rookie season? But some good news there, he finished the year, like, his last 40 games were super productive, and he seemed to have some burgeoning chemistry with Kaapo Kakko. So, you know, I actually think there's a route forward for the Kraken, but I don't really understand, like, the firing as promotion or replacing Ron Francis with someone who's already internal. I think Botterill's a smart guy, by the way. Like, I think the Buffalo situation probably wasn't on him given what we've seen there since his departure. But I'd want a fresh set of ideas, given if I was advising Kraken ownership and Todd Lewicki and co, I would want a fresh set of ideas, in part because I think the failures of the expansion process were enough that it pretty much permanently undermines my confidence in sort of the overall vision of what's been there.
Other front office shuffle we should mention quickly, Lou Lamoriello out on Long Island. So the Islanders begin a search for a new general manager as well. We'll see if that has any ramifications for what they do with their roster going forward, and players that could become available.
I mean, they don't draw enough to rebuild in some ways. You know what I mean? It's a tough, tough spot.
I don't know what you do in that situation, honestly.
I will say, I think Lamoriello, I mean, the Von Taves pivot point is such a massive one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one that we all knew the moment it happened was bad news. But they did make it to two conference finals.
Yep.
In the wake of John Tavares' departure. And that mattered. I think it mattered that that organization was able to move forward with their head held high and real credibility locked in after that occurred. They moved into a new building. That organization is on far better footing today than they were when Lou Lamoriello took over. And he middled it, right? He was trying to always have it both ways. I think we increasingly live in a league where that's a fool's errand. And then, you know, they were kind of done in the season. Like, I don't know if people understand this, but Noah Dobson was not good this year.
Just ask an Islanders fan on social media. They will tell you all about how not good Noah Dobson was.
Took a massive step back this season. You know, the Engvall contract is ugly. Duclair didn't really work out and didn't appeal to Patrick Waugh. The J.G. Pageau deal is going to go down as a howler. The Bo Horvat trade's looking fine. He's been good, and I like they have some interesting sort of like big young wingers. I thought the job they did in that game that they ultimately lost to Vancouver on Quinn Hughes down the stretch there, you know, when the Canucks ran through New York, was like really good. Guys like Sipachev and Holmstrom, I think, give them some like length and size on the wings, and not having Barzal really killed them this year. So I mean, this is not a team that's that far away, I don't think, from being a playoff team.
No, to be totally not from being a playoff team. It's what's the road beyond that is the question, well, in the short term. You know what I mean?
I mean, they need Barzal to be healthy.
Yeah.
You, like, that's you know, at the end of the day, I think a lot of what we're seeing in terms of their issues here come down to Barzal played 30 games this year,
mm-hmm.
right? He played 80 the year before they made the playoffs. He had 80 points. Like he's a point per game guy last year. They made the playoffs. He wasn't in the lineup frequently enough this year and they didn't mm-hmm. like, you know, to some extent, that's a tale as old as time. You need your stars to win you games, especially in this version of the NHL we're watching now.
Elliot and Ladner texts in, is it just me or while watching the playoffs, isn't it evident that the Canucks need to get a whole lot faster? And again, yes. Part of this is the pace, like the stakes differential, right? Like the pace, no matter what team is involved. Slowest team in the league, game one of the playoffs, all of a sudden, it looks like they're playing with a lot more pace, right? Because that's how the Stanley Cup playoffs work. Having said that, yeah, the Canucks need a team speed upgrade. But the thing that stands out to me, and this is not a just this year thing through, you know, 3 days of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I find it something I always notice when the Canucks are out of the playoffs, or at least this vintage of the Vancouver Canucks. The thing that stands out to me about what these teams do that looks most different from what the Canucks are able to do is, and I was trying to think of the best way to say this, but it's like play connected through the neutral zone. And there's a bunch of different ways to do that. And, you know, we'll see Florida tonight, who's one of the most prolific dump and chase teams in the league, but is also really good. But they're connected in the way they dump and chase. You know what I mean? Like this yep. is something Landon Ferraro talked about with us a few times this year. There's a way to dump and chase in a really kind of inefficient, stupid way where you're just doing it because you're basically punting and you probably don't have a prayer of actually getting the puck back. And then there's a real purposeful way of dumping and chasing where you're sending your forecheckers in and it's how you're setting up your offense. And so that's Florida, but there's other teams that obviously, do Carolina. More of the carry it through the neutral zone and try to gain control. There's other teams that just do the really quick up stretch pass to the blue line. But whatever it is, that's what stands out for me is just getting control in your own end and then executing your plan to move from your end through the neutral zone and set yourself up with success for an attacking offensive sequence, whatever that looks like for you. And I really think the only method the Canucks had for doing that with any regularity this year was give the puck to Quinn Hughes. And Quinn Hughes will do all the steps. Yeah. Quinn Hughes will get it out of the defensive zone, carry it through the neutral zone, and probably gain the blue line as well.
Yeah, it's a one-man breakout.
But when I watch even like St. Louis, right, who was the eighth seed this year?
Yeah,
they're way better at doing that than the Canucks were.
Yeah,
and well, that like it's just that element of it.
They have a lot more size and speed on the wings. And
yeah,
that's a huge part of it.
Sure, but the Canucks have to close that gap. The Canucks have to figure out a way just to be more connected through the neutral zone, whether it ultimately leads to dumping the puck in, but your forecheckers are in a better position, or whether they develop more. You know, they tweak their tactics to something else. Like, to me, it's not just about the speed. It's about executing and having the skill, I think, is a huge part of it as well, to make those plays and make those passes. But that's what stood out to me more than anything else, is just there's a smoothness and a fluidity to it that when these teams are operating at their best that we just didn't see with any regularity from the Canucks.
Well, and I wonder how big a role that plays, because I agree with you. You know, the Canucks wanted to do more of that anchoring play,
mm-hmm.
right? They tried to install that at training camp, but we saw it pulled off successfully. Like, I can't think of a Canucks goal that resulted right. from, like, an entry off that anchoring style play.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't think of a key moment in the season. I saw it some games and, like, would be like, ah! But few and far between. And so for our listeners, the anchoring plays where one forward slashes, by which I mean skates laterally across the offensive blue, and then effectively like receives a pass and then drops it to an on-streaking winger. You'll see the Avalanche and the Oilers execute this constantly.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, like one fun thing the Oilers do is they'll have McDavid regroup. Watch this one when the Oilers play the Kings, because they were feasting on it last night. They have McDavid regroup almost like a power play. And the moment he does, the defenders actually become wingers. The Oilers just play this game where they're like, McDavid will get in, so
right.
whatever.
We don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, so they just go.
Yeah.
Bouchard and Ekholm are so good at it. I mean, Ekholm's obviously not in the lineup right now, but Wallman's kind of like perfectly unhinged for it too. Like he's a little bit high risk, so it works. And they'll just go. Their defenders become wingers on a breakout. Canucks could do that a little more with whoever is playing with Quinn Hughes. I mean, that's one way to solve it. Anyway, I do think the speed element matters, and speed is one thing that Pugh Suter and Brock Besser don't have.
Yeah.
Right? Like, those guys are not burners. And by the way, Suter much less so
than Besser.
Than Besser.
Yes.
I mean, Pugh Suter never skates above 20 miles per hour on the ice.
Yeah.
It's actually impressive how statuesque he is. He's the Vinny Testaverde of NHL centermen. And, you know, that I wonder how much that factors into Vancouver's thinking on why those deals haven't been done, on why they've been so careful about those valuations.
I think it's a huge part of it, at least with Besser. Like, I really do. Now, Suter probably as well.
I think it is with Pugh Suter.
Because that's probably one of the things that will keep his value down, right? Like, if Pugh Suter had this season production-wise, but was also fast, like, are we talking about $5 million?
I think we might be talking about $5 million anyway, Jamie.
But you know what I mean? Like, if he was also a really fast skater, and then he had the identical season, 25 goals, he's making more money.
Yes.
Obviously. Because teams pay for physical attributes.
Absolutely.
So, I do think that's probably part of it with Pugh Suter as well, but I keep coming back to what Rutherford said about, you know, get your center sorted out, then you can do some different things on the wings, right? Like, find the guys that are going to create the environment you want, and then find the complementary pieces. Find the pieces that go well with them, and that's probably, as we've seen through Rutherford's career, is probably speed. But I do think there has to be, like, it's not just speed, it's the skill as well. It's the ability to make the plays in the neutral zone that you have to make in order to maintain control and set up what you want to do in the offensive zone. And we've seen, you know, like, Ilya Mikheyev didn't necessarily get the full speed from him here, but also, did he have the skill to be consistently doing that in the top six? So, look, it's a tall order. We're talking about, hey, just go get some fast, skilled players to fill out your forward group with. It's like, yeah, that's what everyone's looking for. And ideally, they'd have some bite to them as well. It's like, okay, that's easy enough to go out and do, but
spoiled much?
That's what they need.
No, that's what they need.
And it's wild.
And again, like, I think when the Blues have played well, for example, in that series, I actually think it's really instructive. It's been that Winnipeg would be an example, Jamie, of a team that actually doesn't have great team speed.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, go watch the game-tying goal from game one of their series of their series against the Blues for an example of how Winnipeg compensates. You know how they compensate? Intricate team-level moves across 200 feet of ice that include 8 consecutive passes being connected.
That's exactly what I'm talking about more than anything. The Canucks just don't have it in them.
Well, you know, good luck.
This year didn't.
Who does? I mean, that
the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, sure, but that team's insanely deep, and they're still vulnerable against faster teams.
But you need to have, like, to be a contender, not just a playoff team, because the Canucks could have been a playoff team this year, right, with a little bit of different luck. To be a contender, you need to either have the incredible elite forecheck of the Florida Panthers, or the elite speed of the Colorado Avalanche, or the elite connectedness of the Winnipeg Jets. Like, you need to have something like that that you can hang your hat on, that differentiates you from other teams, that separates you.
Right.
You're right. So not every team is going to have what the Jets have, but, like, what's your version of it? You know what I mean? How can you create your thing that stands above the vast majority of the league?
Well, the Canucks had their thing, and it was a combination of extremely conservative puck management, having Quinn Hughes and a top five-man unit that could actually, like, outscore and control play against just about anybody. And then they also would combine size on the back end with super aggressive forechecking.
Yes.
Right? From forwards who had a lot of speed, so that they didn't have to go the full 200 foot of ice most of the time, because they were able to force turnovers and mistakes in the neutral zone and pounce on those. That was how the Canucks played, that the wedge that we talked about so often. And they still have some of the personnel to execute a lot of that, to be totally honest with you. Like, I don't think they're in a totally different world.
The forecheck is what needs to get back. It was just night and day this year and last, I think. And you think of, like, you were talking about, like, goals and big moments. Like, think about the Dakota Joshua goal game one against Edmonton.
Sure.
You know, forecheck, right?
Like, yeah, or Nashville.
Yeah, Nashville. Quick stick lift, boom, out in front of the net, boom, goal. And those, they just weren't able to manufacture it. And again, it starts with not just having the speed on the wings, but also putting your, as a team, putting yourself in a position to do that with your play out of your zone and through the neutral zone. And again, just one thing that stood out in a major way watching the first few days of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And they will continue tonight, including game one of Tampa and Florida. Drant says the next few days off, I think even to Monday next week. But
yeah,
as you said,
I'm back Tuesday of next week, but
pending Rick Tocchet signing.
If Rick Tocchet signs or doesn't.
Right.
When Rick Tocchet's decision comes down, I'll jump on the air.
How about
to break
this?
It down.
If Rick Tocchet signs, you can do.
I'll do a hit.
No. If Rick Tocchet leaves, you do a hit.
Okay.
Because you didn't think it was as important.
Well, no. I mean, whatever. We can figure it out. Like, we'll play it by ear, Jamie. I'm gonna enjoy.
We will play it by ear.
I'm clearly going to enjoy this R&R.
We will play it by ear. Yeah, as you frantically refresh to see what the latest is on Rick Tocchet. All right, that's the show. We're back tomorrow here for more Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.